Chapter 72. Martin and his partner take possession of their estate. The joyful occasion involves some further account of Eden. There happened to be on board the steamboat several gentlemen passengers, of the same stamp as Martin's New York friend Mr. Bevan, and in their society he was cheerful and happy. They released him as well as they could from the intellectual entanglements of Mrs. Hominy, and exhibited, in all they said and did, so much good sense and high feeling, that he could not like them too well. If this were a republic of intellect and worth, apostrophe he said, instead of vaporing and jobbing, they would not want the levers, to keep it in motion. Apostrophe, having good tools, and using bad ones, apostrophe returned Mr. Tapley, would look as if they was rather a poor sort of carpenters, sir, wouldn't it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Martin nodded. As if their work were infinitely above their powers and purpose, Mark, and they botched it in consequence. Apostrophe, the best on it is, apostrophe said Mark, that when they do happen to make a decent stroke, such as better workmen, with no such opportunities, make every day of their lives, and think nothing of they begin to sing out so surprising loud. Take notice of my words, sir. If ever the defaulting part of this here country pays its debts along of finding that not paying them won't do in a commercial point of view, you see, and is inconvenient in its consequences, they'll take such a shine out of it, and make such bragging speeches, that a man might suppose no borrowed money had ever been paid afore, since the world was first begun. That's the way they gammon each other, sir. Bless you, I know 'em. Take notice of my words, now. Apostrophe, you seem to be growing profoundly sagacious. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Martin, laughing. Whether that is, apostrophe thought Mark, because I'm a day's journey nearer Eden, and am brightening up before I die, I can't say. Perhaps by the time I get there I shall have grown into a prophet. Apostrophe, he gave no utterance to these sentiments. But the excessive joviality they inspired within him, and the merriment they brought upon his shining face, were quite enough for Martin. Although he might sometimes profess to make light of his partner's inexhaustible cheerfulness, and might sometimes, as in the case of Zephania Scatter, find him too jocose a commentator, he was always sensible of the effect of his example in rousing him to hopefulness and courage. Whether he were in the humor to profit by it, mattered not a jot. It was contagious, and he could not choose but be affected. At first they parted with some of their passengers once or twice a day, and took in others to replace them. But by degrees, the towns upon their route became more thinly scattered, and for many hours together they would see no other habitations than the huts of the woodcutters, where the vessel stopped for fuel. Sky, wood, and water all the livelong day, and heat that blistered everything it touched. On they toiled through great solitudes, where the trees upon the banks grew thick and close, and floated in the stream, and held up shriveled arms from out the river's depths, and slid down from the margin of the land, half growing, half decaying, in the miry water. On through the weary day and melancholy night, beneath the burning sun, and in the mist and vapor of the evening, on, until return appeared impossible, and restoration to their home a miserable dream. They had now but few people on board, and these few were as flat, as dull, and stagnant, as the vegetation that oppressed their eyes. No sound of cheerfulness or hope was heard. No pleasant talk beguiled the tardy time. No little group made common cause against the full depression of the scene. But that, at certain periods, they swallowed food together from a common trough, it might have been old Charon's boat, conveying melancholy shades to judgment. At length they drew near New Thermopylae, where, that same evening, Mrs. Hominy would disembark. A gleam of comfort sunk into Martin's bosom when she told him this. Mark needed none. But he was not displeased. It was almost night when they came alongside the landing place. A steep bank with an hotel like a barn on the top of it, a wooden store or two, and a few scattered sheds. You sleep here tonight, and go on in the morning, I suppose, ma'am? Said Martin. Where should I go on to? Cried the mother of the modern Gracchi. The new Thermopylae. My. Ain't I there? Said Mrs. Hominy. Martin looked for it all round the darkening panorama, but he couldn't see it, and was obliged to say so. Why, that's it. Cried Mrs. Hominy, pointing to the sheds just mentioned. That! Exclaimed Martin. Ah! That! And work it which way you will, it whips Eden, said Mrs. Hominy, nodding her head with great expression. The married Miss Hominy, who had come on board with her husband, gave to this statement her most unqualified support, as did that gentleman also. Martin gratefully declined their invitation to regale himself at their house during the half hour of the vessel's stay, and having escorted Mrs. Hominy and the red pocket handkerchief, which was still on active service, safely across the gangway, returned in a thoughtful mood to watch the emigrants as they removed their goods ashore. Mark, as he stood beside him, glanced in his face from time to time, anxious to discover what effect this dialogue had had upon him, and not unwilling that his hopes should be dashed before they reached their destination, so that the blow he feared might be broken in its fall. But saving that he sometimes looked up quickly at the poor erections on the hill, he gave him no clue to what was passing in his mind until they were again upon their way. Mark, he said then, are there really none but ourselves on board this boat who are bound for Eden? None at all, sir. Most of them, as you know, have stopped short, and the few that are left are going further on. What matters that? More room there for us, sir. To be sure. Said Martin. But I was thinking and there he paused. Yes, sir, observed Mark. How odd it was that the people should have arranged to try their fortune at a wretched hole like that, for instance, when there is such a much better, and such a very different kind of place, near at hand, as one may say. He spoke in a tone so very different from his usual confidence, and with such an obvious dread of Mark's reply, that the good-natured fellow was full of pity. Why, you know, sir, said Mark, as gently as he could by any means insinuate the observation, we must guard against being too sanguine. There's no occasion for it either, because we're determined to make the best of everything, after we know the worst of it. Ain't we, sir? Martin looked at him, but answered not a word. Even Eden, you know, ain't all built, said Mark. In the name of heaven, man, cried Martin angrily, don't talk of Eden in the same breath with that place. Are you mad? There, God forgive me. Don't think harshly of me for my temper. After that, he turned away, and walked to and fro upon the deck full 2 hours. Nor did he speak again, except to say good night, until next day. Nor even then upon this subject, but on other topics quite foreign to the purpose. As they proceeded further on their track, and came more and more towards their journey's end, the monotonous desolation of the scene increased to that degree, that for any redeeming feature it presented to their eyes, they might have entered, in the body, on the grim domains of giant despair. A flat morass, bestrewn with fallen timber, a marsh on which the good growth of the earth seemed to have been wrecked and cast away, that from its decomposing ashes vile and ugly things might rise, where the very trees took the aspect of huge weeds, begotten of the slime from which they sprung, by the hot sun, that burnt them up, where fatal maladies, seeking whom they might infect, came forth at night in misty shapes, and creeping out upon the water, hunted them like specters until day, where even the blessed sun, shining down on festering elements of corruption and disease, became a horror. This was the realm of hope through which they moved. At last they stopped. At Eden too. The waters of the deluge might have left it, but a week before, so choked with slime and matted growth was the hideous swamp which bore that name. There being no depth of water close inshore, they landed from the vessel's boat, with all their goods beside them. There were a few log houses visible among the dark trees, the best, a cow shed or a root stable, but for the wharves, the marketplace, the public buildings, here comes an Edener, apostrophe said Mark. He'll get us help to carry these things up. Keep a good heart, sir. Hello there. Apostrophe, the man advanced toward them through the thickening gloom, very slowly, leaning on a stick. As he drew near, they observed that he was pale and worn, and that his anxious eyes were deeply sunken in his head. His dress of homespun blue hung about him in rags. His feet and head were bare. He sat down on a stump halfway, and beckoned them to come to him. When they complied, he put his hand upon his side, as if in pain, and while he fetched his breath stared at them, wondering. Strangers! Apostrophe, apostrophe, he exclaimed, as soon as he could speak. The very same, apostrophe, said Mark. How are you, sir? Apostrophe, I've had the fever very bad, apostrophe, he answered faintly. I haven't stood upright these many weeks. Those are your notions, I see, apostrophe, pointing to their property. Yes, sir, apostrophe, said Mark, they are. You couldn't recommend us someone as would lend a hand to help carry him up to the town, could you, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, my eldest son would do it if he could, apostrophe, replied the man, but today he has his chill upon him, and is lying wrapped up in the blankets. My youngest died last week. Apostrophe, I'm sorry for it, governor, with all my heart, apostrophe, said Mark, shaking him by the hand. Don't mind us. Come along with me, and I'll give you an arm back. The goods is safe enough, sir, to Martin there ain't many people about, to make away with them. What a comfort that is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, apostrophe, cried the man. You must look for such folk here, apostrophe, knocking his stick upon the ground, or yonder in the bush, towards the north. We've buried most of them. The rest have gone away. Them that we have here, don't come out at night. Apostrophe, the night air ain't quite wholesome, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mark. It's deadly poison, apostrophe, was the settler's answer. Mark showed no more uneasiness than if it had been commended to him as ambrosia, but he gave the man his arm, and as they went along explained to him the nature of their purchase, and inquired where it lay. Close to his own log house, he said. So close that he had used their dwelling as a storehouse for some corn. They must excuse it that night, but he would endeavor to get it taken out upon the morrow. He then gave them to understand, as an additional scrap of local chit-chat, that he had buried the last proprietor with his own hands, a piece of information which Mark also received without the least abatement of his equanimity. In a word, he conducted them to a miserable cabin, rudely constructed of the trunks of trees, the door of which had either fallen down, or been carried away long ago, and which was consequently open to the wild landscape and the dark night. Saving for the little store he had mentioned, it was perfectly bare of all furniture, but they had left a chest upon the landing place, and he gave them a rude torch in lieu of candle. This latter acquisition Mark planted in the earth, and then declaring that the mansion looked quite comfortable, apostrophe hurried Martin off again, to help bring up the chest. And all the way to the landing place and back, Mark talked incessantly, as if he would infuse into his partner's breast some faint belief that they had arrived under the most auspicious and cheerful of all imaginable circumstances. But many a man who would have stood within a home dismantled, strong in his passion and design of vengeance, has had the firmness of his nature conquered by the raising of an air-built castle. When the log hut received them for the second time, Martin laid down upon the ground, and wept aloud. Lord love you, sir! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Tapley, in great terror. Don't do that! Don't do that, sir! Anything but that. It never helped man, woman, or child over the lowest fence yet, sir, and it never will. Besides its being of no use to you, it's worse than of no use to me, for the least sound of it will knock me flat down. I can't stand up agin it, sir. Anything but that. Apostrophe, there is no doubt he spoke the truth, for the extraordinary alarm with which he looked at Martin as he paused upon his knees before the chest, in the act of unlocking it, to say these words, sufficiently confirmed him. I ask your forgiveness a thousand times, my dear fellow, apostrophe said Martin. I couldn't have helped it, if death had been the penalty. Apostrophe, ask my forgiveness. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mark, with his accustomed cheerfulness, as he proceeded to unpack the chest. The head partner asking forgiveness of company A? There must be something wrong in the firm when that happens. I must have the books inspected, and the accounts gone over immediate. Here we are. Everything in its proper place. Here's the salt pork. Here's the biscuit. Here's the whiskey. Uncommon good it smells too. Here's the tin pot. This tin pot's a small fortune in itself. Here's the blankets. Here's the axe. Who says we ain't got a first-rate fit out? I feel as if I was a cadet gone out to Indy, and my noble father was chairman of the board of directors. Now, when I've got some water from the stream before the door, and mixed the grog, apostrophe cried Mark, running out to suit the action to the word, there's a supper ready, comprising every delicacy of the season. Here we are, sir, all complete. For what we are going to receive, etc. Lord bless you, sir, it's very like a gypsy party. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it was impossible not to take heart in the company of such a man as this. Martin sat upon the ground beside the box, took out his knife, and ate and drank sturdily. Now you see, apostrophe said Mark, when they had made a hearty meal, with your knife and mine, I sticks this blanket right afore the door. Or, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.